Blog Talk Radio.
Oh no, how'd that happen?
Yeah.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis. This is MJ Network, after my sister, Marcia Joyce, who started me all on this, and boy, do I miss her a lot, because she used to set me straight. So we have an explosive novel today. This novel is going to literally blow your mind. And I have an appointment after this, and the person said they won't handle my problem unless I bring them the detonator. Literally. Yeah, I'm serious. My friend Sarah is going to handle the billing problem for me, and she said she won't do it unless she gets the book, because when she heard I was interviewing you, she was sorry she couldn't listen at the doctor's office. So, Vincent Zandri, this book is fantastic, and it gets you from the very first line, the warehouse is wired to blow, and after that I started to shake. Oh my God. How did you create first of all, tell everybody this summer, how did you create the prologue for this book? Because that's really that got me going right away.
Yeah. First of all, thanks for having me on your show again, Fran.
Oh, I love having you around. It's great.
I appreciate it. Fran and I were just talking about how, like, we both have the flu again for the second time this season. So if my voice sounds a little out of whack, it's because I am entirely out of whack. How did I come up with the prologue? And I always give you the standard answer, which is, I don't know. I just sat down and wrote it. But I did I used to be in the construction business many years ago, and I was involved in some never explosive demolition projects, but certainly demolition projects. And I had always pictured in my head, like, what would happen if, like, someone, like, tried to, like, you know, rig, like, a second detonator bring down a big building, and, like, what if people were caught in that building and it was coming down, and, you know, tried to escape it or whatever. Anyway, all I could picture is, like, Bruce Willis, you know, playing the lead, and you know, some sort of action thriller like that revolving around explosive demolitions. So I guess that, you know, it was just, I'm sure it was influenced by the movies or whatever. I set out to write this book for sure, as like an action thriller that just was relentless, that is just relentless, doesn't stop from the first word. And I think I pulled it off.
You definitely did pull it off. It scared the daylights out of me. That's for sure. So the prologue set the scene for the events to come. Tell us a drop. What happens when Ike and Brian, Brian decides to do something in the prologue? Why does he decide to do that? Well, how does he decide to do that? That scared the daylights out of me, let me tell you.
Yeah, I mean, my protagonist in the book, Ike Singer, who's based on a real good friend of mine named Ike Singh, actually. and he himself is in, like, he's not in the demolitions business, but he is in environmental cleanup business. But anyway, he's very human, and he made a mistake once upon a time with he and his partner's wife just had one night together when both their marriages were failing. And eventually Brian found out about it, and it creates some very serious tension between the two. And what makes it even worse is that I'm trying not to give anything away, but I don't think I am. It's crucial to the plot. But what makes it even worse is that Brian's wife has not only spent that one night with him, she's actually fallen in love with Ike Singer. And now Brian, Ike's partner, knows this. And so he's going to try to take them all down together in the opening prologue, anyway. Fast forward almost 20 years later, and Brian Darling's daughter appears on the scene. And she's become not only a demolitions expert in her own right, but she's become a doctor of nano explosives. And she's sort of been passed around from foster home to foster home. And she's just been dreaming of this grand revenge, when the time she could take this grand revenge on Brian Darling, or rather on Ike Singer for having left her mother high and dry. So that's the basis of the book. It's a huge revenge book.
And it's a really good revenge book because you don't know what's going to happen. Because
yeah. And
they get sucked in.
Yes. Yes, Ike's got this very, really nice family. His son suffers from progeria syndrome, which makes things even more precarious. And also, one of the interesting things about this book is, at least, and one of the, I think it was Publishers Week, no, it was, not Kirkus, it was Booklister, really focused on the fact that I had a female antagonist, which is kind of unusual. It's usually a male antagonist, but in this case, I love the idea of the femme fatale.
Yeah, I thought this was great. You know who else has one? But I'm not going to give it away. He's going to be on my show Thursday. Philip Margolin. Has a female, in The Third Victim. And he can't have my review till next week when the book comes out. But he's going to be on the show. And then Brian Freeman's going to be on Wednesday for The Voice Inside. But, yeah, he's got some really evil people in that book, The Third Victim. So if you like reading this one, I've got hands out for everything, but they're not getting them. They have to stop buying books, really, people. So I looked up progeria, and I felt so bad because Henry's a really cool character. I like him. And I said, oh, my God, this poor kid's not going to make it to whatever,
right.
And he's really smart. And he really helps out. So what is Ike's job for the police, and why does he lose his license and lose Master Blasters? And that's such a cool name, really. That's so cool. And how does and it relates to the prologue. So this is so cool. How did you come up with Master Blaster? That is so great. I like that.
Master Blaster just came out of thin air, just as I was writing it. I'm like, what would be a cool name? Because these the demolition of tall towers, like that, it's a big spectacle. If you've ever seen one, sometimes and they people come and gather around, and they have audiences, and they have rock bands, and they make a big spectacle of it. The lights and the light shows and all sorts of stuff. And all I could picture was like they'd have cool merchandise for sale, like hats and T-shirts with the Master Blasters logo on it. And I wanted a cool name, and I think that's a cool name. But
I think you should create the T-shirts and the hats.
I know. As I'm saying that, I'm like, oh, that's a pretty good marketing thing right there.
Yeah.
In the prologue, when this building comes down, before it's supposed to come down, for reasons I won't explain, I'll let the readers read it. And I did my research on this, and I based it on a real event that happened in Philadelphia. When the building came down, people were injured. And, of course, Brian Darling gets killed. But the New York State pulls his license. And so what he does is he retrains himself to becoming a bomb disposal expert, and he ends up working as a private contractor for the Albany Police Department, because believe it or not, the Albany Police Department does not have its own like bomb disposal unit. What they use is either Homeland Security or the state troopers. And so in this case, they're like, well, we're going to, because the world is so messed up now, and that there's always a chance that bombs could be a problem, we're going to actually, contract a full-timer. And that's what they did. And now, as the book opens up, they're on the Singer family is enjoying a nice vacation in Cape Cod. And all Ike is doing is complaining about how boring his life is now because he can't blow up buildings anymore. And his wife's like, that's a good thing because, at least now I know you're coming home alive every day. You know, and then he just says, you know, like it, the talk goes into him, you know, complaining like, well, even when there is like a bomb scare, it's usually just like some kids playing with firecrackers or something like that, you know.
Mm.
But in this book, he gets tested for the first time in a big way, because not only does the Singer family become victims of this vengeful woman, but all of Albany does.
That's what's even scarier, because she didn't care who she takes down, as long as she takes down everybody else, it doesn't matter. So.
Yeah.
They're on a vacation, and Allison shows up, and then he realizes what she wants more than a casual interlude with his family. Ellen and Henry don't realize that, and she goes off with them, and that scared the daylights out of me. And she didn't realize,
because
she thought Allison was wonderful. She got fooled. How come?
Yeah, because of one very special, very damning secret. Ike, for all these years, has kept, and again, I'm not really giving anything away, it's crucial to the plot. Ike has kept his interlude with Patty Darling, his 1999 or whatever, whenever it happened, his one single night interlude with her, a secret from his wife, because, you know, they have a solemn vow with one another that, you know, they won't cheat ever. And that type of thing. And he's afraid if she finds out, he'll lose everything. He'll lose her. You know, he loves her very much, and he knows he made a mistake. And so he has never told her. And so when Allison shows up, naturally, Henry and Ike's wife are like, oh, my gosh, it's so great to see you after all these years. You've turned into, like, a really, you know, smart and wonderful young woman. Meanwhile, she's out to kill them.
That is scary. When she begins her reign of terror and decides to blindside Ike, what does she do to his car? That scares me too. It's lucky that they even came out alive. And how come no one realized that she's out of her mind?
She's been working, and this is real too, of course. She's been working on these nanothermite explosives. All it takes is a little drop of this stuff, like a little tiny drop, and it can create an explosion that's like, you know, like, I don't know how many sticks of TNT. So, like, you can literally just carry in your, like, chest pocket, in this case, she, like, actually carries the nanothermite inside, like, a vapor cigarette holder or a vapor cigarette device. And all it takes, she just puts a couple of little drops on Ike Singer's Black Suburban's rear brake pedal. And as he's driving, his not only does his tire explode, but the whole mechanism explodes, nearly flipping the car.
Mm.
And even then, at that point, as they're pulled off to the side of the road, like Ike's wife and son are like, oh, you know, it must be a blowout. And doesn't Allison happen to show up along the side of the road? And she's like, well, we'll give them a ride home to Albany. And Ike, we'll leave you with to have the Suburban repaired. So at that point, because Ike is narrating the book, at that point we realize Allison is really a psycho.
Yeah, she is crazy. A scary psycho.
Yeah.
But yet, Ellen and Henry take to her. How come? They're completely blindsided and fooled.
Because she's so sweet. She's so lovable.
Yeah, I know.
And she's cute, and she's smart, and she's good with Henry. And, you know, she's just, you know, she's got her stuff together. She's just, like, entirely so sweet, you know. And she even reminds Ike of her mother.
The kind of person I don't trust. Anybody that's too nice. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's because we're New Yorkers, friend.
Yeah, what can I say? If anybody's trying to call in, the circus is still busy. It's a good thing that I called you back. Because for some reason I'm trying to call in on my cell phone just to see, and the circuits are busy. So I just put that on my Facebook wall. I don't know why the circuits are busy, but I will email Blog Talk Radio later. That never happened before. I've had static on my phone, and they checked that out too, and it was the other person's phone. Thank God it wasn't my new one that I just got. I don't know.
Right.
Well, we have.
Well, if anybody has any specific questions about the book, they could just go to vincentzandri.com and email me.
That's what I'm going to tell them. I have my Facebook thing out right now. My phone is always next to me no matter where I go. I'd be lost without it.
I know. Who wouldn't be, right?
I know. I walked out without it yesterday. That was a mistake because 5 people said, "Where were you?" I go, "I probably knew you were calling and don't want to talk to you." So, you know, what can I say?
Yeah.
Especially if somebody asks for money, I don't know you anymore.
That's right.
So, 1-800, who are you? So we talked about Patty and the affair, right? And you know what?
Yep.
Brian should have gotten over it, and he should have just approached Ike and said, "Oh, I know about this, whatever." And it didn't dawn on them to, like, talk it out. So when the tow truck driver sees the damage, what does he tell Ike that caused it? And at that point, he should have realized that something's not right. The tow truck driver realized there was something wrong, didn't he? He knew right away.
Yeah, because the tow truck driver's like, "Hey, look, at you know what? I did, like, 2 tours in Iraq. And, you know, the only time I've seen damage like this is from an IED, a roadside IED. And I think, you know, up to that point, I think Ike's like, he suspects it too. He's like, this isn't just a normal blowout. You know, this was a bomb that was planted. But what he's not sure of is what kind of bomb. And then that's what gets him looking into, like, the name of thermites, because he puts 2 and 2 together, because she had mentioned to him, Allison had mentioned to him that you know, or had told him flat out that she was a doctor of nanothermites. And so he puts 2 and 2 together, and he's like, "Wow, she's really after us."
That's scary. So what in Allison's past has revealed that we know she went through tough times after? Well, she was in different foster homes and stuff. And I can understand
because
I dealt with foster care for a lot of my students, and I went after them. If I thought anything was wrong, you don't know. I went after a couple of them with a vengeance. And in one case, they were trying to take the child away from the foster mother, putting her back with the real mother. And I went after the agency, and I won. Unfortunately, they put the child back with the mother when the mother got out of jail. She was part of the Brinks robbery. And when he had a fatal accident in his mother's care, so after he graduated. So why lie about how her mother died? She said something that the mother was sick, but the mother really wasn't sick, was she?
No. I'm trying to think back on this book now. She uses her mother as like a ploy to she lies about her mother's death, tells him she has cancer. And she does it to pull on his heartstrings and to draw him in, to draw Ike in. In reality, because Ike knew he didn't treat her well, and he knew how much she loved him, and he also knew how much it pained her when he just refused to talk to her after that one night. And she went into, you know, she just became an alcoholic and a drug addict, and because of that, Allison had to, go into these foster homes, one of which was abusive. And I think Allison, there's 2 Allisons. There's the Allison who understands the reality of the abuse and what the pain it caused her. And then there's the Allison who kind of fantasizes about what their life could have been like had Ike and her mother actually gotten together.
Yeah, but that I don't know. I wonder what would have happened if she had lived and then she confronted you know, them. And then she would have confronted Ike. And I wonder what would have happened to his family. I don't know if he really wanted to lose Henry and Ellen.
No way would he have wanted to. I think when I was originally plotting out the book or in my mind, because I don't really, you know, sit there and write out an outline anymore. I just sort of outline it as I go. But I think originally I was thinking it would be, you know, Ike versus, you know, Patty versus the mother. But then I thought, how much more interesting would it be if years have passed and it's the daughter now who's seeking the revenge?
It made more sense. It made more sense because I don't think Patty would have done that. She just tried to make him guilty.
Exactly. And, you know, but much more interesting that here's this person who, you know, has, you know, become an explosives expert, and she's using it against him.
Well, I know that Daly was forced to care. I can understand where Allison's coming from in certain areas.
Sure.
The system doesn't work. ACS
doesn't
always listen. I know that.
Right.
The judges, the priests, and Planned Parenthood, this poor girl went through every agency, and no one listened to her. So how do you deal with that? I mean, this is what fueled her anger also, is the fact that no one listened to her. So she wanted to get even with just about everyone.
Yeah, she did. She did. And in doing so, it presented the challenge of Ike Singer's life, because what had been like just a boring do-nothing job for so many years previously now became like three separate major nanothermite explosive scenarios in Albany on the same night. And he's got to like race to try to stop them all, but he can't possibly.
I know, that's scary. Ike thinks that he's in control. When does he realize that she's in control, that Allison is running the show, and if he does or says anything, she's going to kill his family? She's really evil. She's a good character.
Yeah, it, for sure he realizes it after the three bomb incident in Albany, when he finally comes home. And he's back with his wife, and I think he's just about ready to go to bed, and there's an explosion outside the house. And that's when he knows. He's like, okay, she's got the upper hand. And then there's another explosion that nearly kills them inside the house. Allison was able to plant a little bit of nanothermite inside Ike's wife's piano. I'm not going to give away how... You know, it's a pretty cool scene. Let people read it. Yeah. And after that happens, then Allison actually kidnaps Henry. And they begin a game of cat and mouse in the woods.
That's what's scarier, because I played the piano and I was afraid to go over to mine after you wrote that. Seriously, I had them check it out to make sure there was nothing in there for Allison after reading the book.
Yeah.
So, Tell us about Nick Miller and why Ike contacts him before he is able to get home. And who is this guy?
Nick Miller appears in a lot of my books. He's the chief homicide detective at the APD. And he doesn't just appear in this book. He appears in so many of my books. And, I should eventually write a book called Miller, right? He's instrumental in that. He knows he's Ike has to convince him to protect his family. But Miller's not buying it at first, because he thinks, you know what? What's happening in Albany is so horrific that it could be the work of terrorists. But Ike's like, no, it's not. It is most definitely the work of a terrorist, but this terrorist is not, you know, is not from Syria. This terrorist is like a lovely little girl from Albany. And so it takes Miller a while to swallow that, and once he figures it out, he realizes what he's up against.
That's scary. It was scary. So what happens when he realizes he's being targeted, but first by the judge, the priest, and the boss of Planned Parenthood? She goes after everyone. How does she manage to do that? I mean, scary. She's scary.
Yeah, she plots it out. She took years to plan this out. And, she went after every institution in the city that failed her. Every single institution, be it religious, be it social services, be it family care. She goes after everybody. And then in the end, she goes after the one guy and his family who destroyed her mother's life.
She's really cunning, let me tell you. So
yeah.
How and why did you choose the weapon and the motive explosion, and how each person that she went after was held captive? That was scary too.
Yeah, no, I researched all that.
These places.
Right, I researched all that. Also, I found out that these vape devices that a lot of the kids use, those are prone to explosion as even without being jerry-rigged with nanothermite. Those things are prone to explosion. They can blow up right in your face. So I just did a little bit of research on how to build bombs. And I'm sure I'm on
That's
some...
That's really fun.
I know, I'm sure I'm on some FBI watch list, but... you know, every time I go to the airport, I'm like getting ready to be pulled aside. But I purposely, I did a lot of research on it, and I found out that, like, with nanothermites, you don't need to, like, build a pipe bomb that's, like, 2 feet long anymore. You can build a pipe bomb out of an e-cig device. And so, like, you know, plus the stuff is liquid, and it's undetectable, and it really is the explosive of the future. And then on top of it, she's working on she's working on nanothermite tip bullets, which is also being worked on. That's reality as well. The only problem is there's really not a gun that's developed yet that can take the heat of a nanothermite bullet once it's discharged from the weapon. But there is one gun that possibly could handle it, and that's the gun that she uses in the book. It's a really big gun. Really big gun, friend.
Mm. Oh, God. So this is, I want everybody to understand that this is fiction. And your important note at the end of the book about homemade explosives, you want them to know that what is real and what is fake and what you omitted and why, because I don't want anybody going home and trying to do this. Because that would not be good.
Yes.
That's seriously, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think Jim Harrison wrote a book called A Good Day to Die. I think, yes, A Good Day to Die, back in 1973. And it was about some guy who hooks up with another guy who wants to blow up the Hoover Dam. And check it out. It was a real sleeper, but Jim Harrison's one of my favorite authors. But at the end, he has this disclaimer. It's like he purposely left out certain details of the bomb making experience. And I thought, you know what? I'm gonna what's good enough for the master is good enough for me, and I'm gonna do the same thing. I'm not gonna, I give you enough detail to make it real, but there's no reason. I don't want anybody buying the book and being like, oh, God, this book is like, this book is a blueprint for bomb building. You know what I mean? I don't want that.
Yeah, that would scare me, especially after what happened last week at my where my niece's school was. They all had that whole thing. It was horrible in Parkland.
Oh, jeez. I didn't know your niece was down there.
Yeah, she lost a couple of friends.
That's terrible.
She lost some of her close friends. It was awful. And before I forget, Wednesday, Brian Freeman, The Voice Inside. Thursday, Philip Margolin, The Third Victim. On the 6th, White Witch, Larry Thompson. We'll talk about Annie Palmer, the real White Witch of Rose Hall. On the 8th, Scary Buck, Death Theory. The 12th, Alan Jacobson and Gerard DeMoraney. we're going to talk about something that I know a lot about, school safety, evacuation plans, what should go into a school safety plan, how do you train the staff and the students like they do in Israel and other countries and other schools, and what was missing. And I may even touch on a very controversial topic, because I've been asking some people whether they feel that teachers should be armed in the school. That is, as an educator, to be very honest, for 36 years I went into my school. I taught in a tough school in the Bronx, and I was never afraid. And we dealt with bomb scares and stuff like that. And I think I dealt with it just fine without any weapon in my hand. What can I say? But there's a lot of different things. So that's going to be one. The 15th, look for her. The 19th, well-timed murder. The 21st, this is exciting. I can't believe it. Mark Cameron writes for Tom Clancy. He's coming on that day. I can't believe it.
Wow.
Of course, somebody that you know very well, Charles Salzberg, the second story man. And on the 29th, in memory of my mom, I'm going to do a show on Alzheimer's. I'm going to talk about Alzheimer's, elder care abuse, and traumatic brain injury, because that's what my sister died of. And we're going to talk about that with Marcia Casper-Cook and Irene Brodsky and anyone out there that has a story that they want to add to my upcoming caregiver guide, which is coming out in like 3 weeks, I hope. Feel free to send me your information, because I want to add some more true stories. So what else did she learn on how to use, and why did she get this? What's her link to China, Allison? Everybody seems to be linking everything to China. They're worrying me, these Chinese people.
Yeah. Well, they're financing her. And this is one of, I don't want to spoil anything by any means, but it's just, it's kind of like her connection with them you'll realize that in the grand scheme, she not only wanted to destroy her hometown, home city, and her father's former best friend, but she just wants to leave. She wants to destroy any memory of, I think, the United States even. You know what I mean? She just wants to, she wants to go elsewhere, and she's willing to just betray everything. Everything and anything, and almost be a hero at the same time. But of course,
I don't know if I would call her a hero if she succeeds. But okay,
but she's delusional.
She's
she's delusional. Yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah.
So there's a place near me that's called VAP, and they have these e-cigs. And I would never go in there, because I don't go near cigarettes. What are e-cigs, and how do they come into play with the explosion? That was really clever. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, well, like, I just went over it. You know, the e-cig device is the perfect perfect size and the perfect tool with which to transport this nanothermite stuff. And you can use them, have them out there on plain day. No one's really going to know the difference. So I thought since it's a little bit more difficult to carry around pipe bombs, those are pretty obvious, but, with the nanothermite now, you can have a pipe bomb that's the size of a Bic pen.
You know, what's scary is that kids read these books or they copy it, and that's what bothers me, is that a lot of people just think that, well, if they could do that, I'm going to do that, and there's a lot of angry people, as we learn what happened on February 14th. We realize that. So this character is my favorite in the book, Henry.
Henry
plays, although he's got progeria, and he's supposedly not going to live very long, it has nothing to do with the fact that the kid is a genius. So how does he help manage to? How does he manage to help out in this book without giving it away? You got to bring him back, because I love him. I love this guy.
Yeah, Henry is, despite the fact that he's a 20-year-old, 90-year-old, if that makes sense. He is he offers like almost comic relief at times, and he's so smart. And sometimes he talks to his parents like he's the parent. And they, you know, and there's obviously the parents are just so beside themselves because they know that he's not going to live very long. And in fact, I think kids with progeria rarely live to see 20. And as the book opens, he's about to turn 20. And he's self-deprecating, you know. And he'll say things like, you know, like, I don't know if I'm going to make 20, but I'm going to certainly try. And, you know, I think I'll take extra Geritol tonight, you know. And the whole family actually jokes like that. And it's their defense mechanism against the inevitable. So Henry becomes like a really special character like that. He's kind of like, he's very philosophical about his fate. But he's not bitter. And he really enjoys the life he's had and the life, you know, every day is special to him. And the parents know that every minute they have with him is special. And then it's not going to last.
The scary part is there's no cure. That's even scarier.
Right. Yes.
I know. There's so many things. I know somebody put some, my niece is a paramedic in Florida.
Oh.
And she put something on yesterday about a little little child that's got an inoperable brain tumor, and everybody's praying that maybe there'll be a miracle. They can't do anything about it. And with all their medical everything, sometimes I wonder if they ever really want to find a cure for anything. It's scary.
Oh, I know.
I
wonder if they want to find a cure for cancer as it is. I know.
I wish they would have found the cause of Alzheimer's so my mother would have made it a few more years, but she fought it until she couldn't fight it anymore. So,
right.
Patty, this is a cool thing. You created Patty as Ike's conscience and a reminder of what he did in the past, called him to just talk. Why did he ignore her phone calls? So how come you created that part? I mean, you get to know Patty in the story.
The literary ghost device, which is becoming sort of trendy. I don't know if it's becoming trendy now, but
a lot of people are doing it.
Yeah. Ike is able to talk to her like he sees her almost like a ghost, and he knows, you know, she's not a ghost. You know, it's his figment of his imagination, but she actually appears for him, and they have whole discussions, and she asks him like questions that the audience, that the reader would naturally want to ask him, you know, like, why didn't you call me back? You know, like, what, all you had to do was just give me one phone call, you know, you wouldn't even talk to me at Brian's funeral, you know, and so it becomes a really great literary device for like filling in the gaps, and she also becomes, even though she's dead during the book, she becomes really alive for the reader. And it's a really cool device. I'm sure I'll use it again at some point.
Yeah, you get to know her better, so you get to understand why she would be angry if she was still alive and she wasn't really dead. And we're not going to tell how she got dead. That was interesting, too. I didn't see that one coming. So we've got revenge, fear, betrayal, meaning off my paper, retribution, hate, abandonment, loyalties are just some of the issues in this book. So how do all of them and more apply to Ike's family and his relationship with Allison and hers and her feelings of hate towards Ike? Hate is a bad word, let me tell you. And she's got it really bad.
Yeah, it does. You know, Ike just loves his family so much, and they're the world to him, and he will do anything to keep them safe, sound, and happy. And his worst fear is that he's going to lose them. And he just knows that he made such a mistake years ago. And he's a very brave guy, but he could have been braver maybe in just having spilled everything early on to his wife. But instead, Allison shows up, and she is, you know, she is just, going to enact a revenge on him like he never would have believed.
Mm.
And what bothers him more than anything is that it's not so much that this is some sort of psychotic femme fatale, like I was saying. It's just that, like, he kind of knows deep inside, like, well, you know what? You know what, Singer? This whole thing is sort of your own fault.
Mm.
If you had just manned up 20 years ago, none of this would be happening. I like writing characters. I like writing characters that are fallible. You know what I mean? You know, and I think that's what makes them human. I think that's what makes them relatable, because we all screw up, right? Right, friend? I mean, we all make mistakes. That's part of life. But what some people don't realize is that you can make a mistake now, a very simple mistake, a very human mistake, but it's not going to haunt you for like another two decades, you know? And that's the scary thing.
People don't realize it. As a matter of fact, I try to explain to my nieces and nephews who actually listen to this person, because they don't think I'm crazy.
Right.
Before you do something, the consequences, think about it ahead.
Right.
And say to yourself, am I going to pay the penalty for what I'm about to do? Or maybe I shouldn't do it. Obviously my students did very well. They understood me, because I have to honestly say that my students are on Facebook and they remind me that I tortured them. No, that I was really good to them and they loved me, even though I was tough.
Right.
But you know, it's something right. Yeah, they said, you know, your punish lessons were kind of rough, but you know what? We also know that we love you and you care. So that's really nice.
That's right.
That makes me feel great. Yeah, I didn't screw up. No, they said I was the. Some of them actually said because of me they actually read. I said, but if you really love me that much, you'd read some of my books and help me review them. They didn't volunteer.
Yes.
Nobody does.
So
there are lessons that I think come through in this book for social workers, priests, judges, teachers, and other agencies. What would have happened if anybody actually listened to Allison and helped her out? Do you think she would have still wanted to kill Ike anyway?
No, I don't. I think, I'm a big like anti-government guy. You know what I mean? I don't know if I'm libertarian or whatever, but I'm very much, and this shows through in almost all my books, I think, you know, I'm very much, one of the things I'm most afraid about is one day I'm going to grow old and like, become a part of the system and like, you know, become part of a health system that is just like, you know, you're just a number, become a part of a, you know, some sort of system where they just don't care about you. You're just a part of the government and you're just entirely dependent on the government and you no longer have any rights whatsoever. And that's the kind of thing that scares me. And in terms of Allison, when she just became like, no one cared about her. And that's
yeah, I know.
Another thing. And that's another thing I like to write about is maybe the protagonist isn't always so great, and maybe the antagonist, in some sense, you can't blame them, so they're not always so bad. But yet they're still right and wrong, and choices have to be made. So both my antagonists and protagonists in all my books are like, they have bad qualities and good qualities, just like anybody else. I mean, there's no excuse for what she does in this book. There's no excuse whatsoever. But she had it rough.
She needed a hug. She needed somebody to hug her and listen and say, you're right. And as an educator, that would bother me that even her teachers didn't realize that she was going through this. When someone is physically abused, you know, I had a parent that walked in one day, the kid that walked in one day, and she said to me, my father burned my arm. Look at that. And I was like, that's never going to she said he took an electric switch. And I immediately called the police. We took care of it. And the father came in and said, "What shall I do next time?" I said, "I have to tell you, you won't get another chance because they're right behind you."
You won't get another chance, you SOB.
Yeah, I said that too. And it was open school night. I said, "You're not going to get a chance to hurt these children who I love and your wife, who means a lot to me." And fortunately, I was right. You know what? If you see something, you don't say something, then it would have been my fault. And I couldn't live with myself
right then.
So,
no, you can't.
Ellen, you can't. When and how does Ellen learn the truth about what happened? And how does she feel about learning what he did? Because that could just ruin her whole world.
Yeah, as soon as Henry's kidnapped, he's got to lay it on the line. And he's got to say, like, you know, because she knows. She's like, what is up? What is happening? What's going on here? And you know what's going on. She can tell. And he just lays it on the line to her. And he's like, this is what happened. And at first, she's very angry. But then that anger is superseded by the fact that they have to rescue Henry. So, you know, without getting into how that happens, because it's very exciting, read the book. And even in the end, you know, like, we don't know, you know, after the book is over, we don't know what the fate of them will be, but I suspect that they'll work it out.
You don't know the whole fate of anything at the last page. I was like, whoa, what's going to happen next? So when trying to survive and find Henry, the last five chapters helped me wondering to figure out who lived and who died. And we're not going to tell them. How did you create that extra added suspense? Because I said, huh? I read it four times until I said, oh, my God, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah. Well, the last five chapters were like my most favorite to write. Because when I started this book, I knew that I wanted to end it this way. You know, there's a tower explode. There's a demolitions. A hotel is scheduled to be demolished in Albany. And had Master Blasters been around, it probably would have been their contract. But instead, it was contracted to a Chinese company that was connected to Allison. So I pictured in my head, like, Ike and his family being, like, tied up to the beams of this building that was just about to be demolished. That's as far as I go in talking about it.
That's right. You can't tell anybody anything, because when I read the last book, the last page, I go, like, oh, my God, exactly what is going to happen, and who's going to die and who's not going to die, and is she going to win? So this leaves room for a sequel, people. So we have about 10 minutes.
Yeah, it does, actually.
Yeah, it does leave it for a sequel. But like I said, you got to. Nick is okay, but Henry's my favorite character. Sorry, people. It's really sad that he's got this disease. Although you never know, you could figure out maybe he gets cured or it was a mistake. You never know in this world when you write something.
You never know.
So
especially with fiction.
If I could, especially, that's right. So if I could speak to everyone, what would he tell them about what he did and how we know that Nick might have a conscience too, or does he? Would he change anything? Would he have done the same thing twice?
No, I think this whole thing is a huge lesson for Ike. I think, sometimes, you know, it's a lesson that, like, you know, maybe honesty is the best policy right off the bat. You know, that it doesn't really pay to hide such a huge secret. It's better to just lay it out there on the line. And if your relationship is strong enough, you will overcome it. You know, I'm just getting off a breakup of my ex-wife and I got back together for a second time. And we didn't get married a second time, but we were together a second time. And just one day out of the blue, just this summer, she said, you know what, I think your writing takes precedent over the relationship. And she's like, that's it. And I thought, like, wow. Out of how hard did we work for this? And and how many good times did we have? And, you know, we traveled, we built a family, you know, because we have a daughter together. And then just like for almost no reason, you're just going to give this up. So that type of thing is always in my mind, you know, I think relationships are something that, like, you know, you have to build on, and there has to be, you know, if a relationship is good enough, if the love is there, then you can withstand anything. You know, you might go through periods where you absolutely hate one another, but, you know, you'll get over it. You know, relationships like that don't come easy, and they don't come cheap.
Well, you know, to ask somebody to give up their vocation because you feel like you're taking second place is wrong, too.
Right. It is, especially when you went into the relationship. I'm sorry, I was just going to say, when you went into the relationship, knowing that this is what you do.
And that would not be you. You can't change what somebody is. I learned that a long time ago.
Yep.
I'm getting good at this.
You can't.
And maybe it's because my 15-year-old niece, who's going to be 16 in 3 weeks, is going to be a forensic psychiatrist. Yes, she's taking after her aunt with her huge high index. And she's gotten letters from Harvard, Villanova, and a whole bunch of universities. And I said, Katie Rose.
Oh, my God, already.
Yeah, she's smart. But she's trying to get to where I went when I graduated with a 4.0. for my two last masters, and she said, I'm going to get there. I said, don't worry about it. You'll get there. She's got about a 3.8. She's okay. Are you going to bring back Ike? Are you going to bring back anybody in the next book? What's next for you?
I'm going to give you the Harlan Ellison answer, Fran. If somebody wants to grease my palm with silver, I'm absolutely happy to bring it back. Let's put it that way. Pay the writer.
I agree with you. But this book is like, it deems a sequel. So what's next for you? We have about 2 minutes. What's next for you?
I think Detonator's getting a lot of Hollywood attention. So I have a strong feeling that this will at least be optioned and optioned quickly, especially based on the reviews it's getting.
Mine's there with
for
five
anybody,
stars.
Yes, it was a very beautiful review. Thank you. And this week, I will be appearing at the Mysterious Bookshop on Thursday evening at 6 o'clock for a launch of the Detonator. And I'll be there signing first edition hard copies. Please show up, anybody who's listening. Free beer, free wine. And I'll be giving a short reading and a short question and answer and just, make a night of it. So that's at the Mysterious Bookshop on Thursday at 6 o'clock, I think 6 to 8, something like that. I have a book of short stories coming out next month. I have the first in what will be the Young Chase Baker series coming out.
Oh, nice.
I have the first season of the erotic noir series that I'm doing, Handyman, is now available. What else? I signed on with a new agent, Sam Hyatt, at the Rights Factory, and we have two huge books. I can't say much about it, but we have two huge standalones that are going to be going.
Oh, nice.
That are, you know, there'll be some big news on both these books come this summer.
Good.
So it's going to be a very big, big year. Very big year. Yeah, last year was sort of meh. But this year's going to be huge. So stay tuned, folks.
Just make sure I get them first. I'm getting very
as
upset
always,
when you send me things first.
Always, Fran. Always, always.
And to send a message to someone, when I'm not going to say who, for those of you that think that I put spoilers in my reviews, I don't. And for anybody that feels that I put something in their review that shouldn't be there, the proper thing would be to tell me that you feel that sentence should come out, and if I think I agree with you, then maybe I'll take it out. But basically, this reviewer tries to not put any spoilers in any reviews, nor do I ever write a bad review. If a book is not worth 3 stars, I just won't review it. It's not my place to take somebody's hard-earned work, and I've got a few inside that weren't that, what can I say? So I'll just do a summary. So before we end, number one, if this goes on the wide screen, it better be in New York City so I could be in the front row. Seriously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll get you in there, Fran. We'll get you in the shots.
Without a doubt. Right.
Absolutely.
And who's going to play Ike? Who do you think should play Ike?
I see a guy like, I mean, everyone's going to laugh, but I kind of see a guy like Bruce Willis or even Sylvester Stallone.
I love Sylvester Stallone. I think he is the coolest. He's great.
I do too.
And that fake news the other day upset me. Whoa.
Oh, I know, right. They said he died or something? Or?
He didn't. He's okay.
No, he's in great shape.
He's in his late 60s, though. Isn't he kind of old?
He's 72. Yeah, but he's in great shape.
Matt Damon is good. Matt Damon is good also. I like him. I don't like too many
Matt
people.
Damon would.
And Harrison.
Yeah, Matt.
Harrison Ford, Harrison. I love. I love Harrison Ford.
Yes, I do too. I'm trying to think who else. Brad Pitt would be good. I mean, naturally, I've got the most, I'm talking about the most expensive leading men. But money's no object when it comes to Hollywood, right? Right?
Of course not. And if it's a Vincent Sandry book, you know I'm going to promote it. And if it's in the movie, then I'm going to tell everybody to see it. Because for some reason, everybody listens to me. I have no clue why. So, before we end, where can everybody find out about you and about your work? And everybody that hasn't bought any of his books, what are you waiting for? We've got holidays coming up. You've got Easter. You've got Passover.
Yep.
You have March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. I believe presents should be bought for everything. And, you know, Father's Day, Mother's Day, you can't get them too soon. Seriously.
Right. Well, of course, VincentZandry.com. VincentZandry.com. Just go there, and you can go anywhere from there. Also today, for anybody listening who has a Kindle Fire device, mm-hmm. The Remains, I think, is available on that for a limited time today. As a flash sale, Kindle Fire sale. So take advantage of that.
Oh, that is good. So I want to thank you. You're going to be at the Thriller Fest this year?
I think I am going to be there this year. I'm hoping to be nominated. But even if I'm not, I think I will be there this year. And I think The Detonator has got a great shot for winning Best Hardcover Original next year at Thriller Fest.
I hope so. And Blog Talk Radio is apologizing. We had to reach out under the circumstance. Our engineers are investigating the troubles with one of the service providers for guest calling. We will send an update, and they are apologizing to those of you that are listening that would have liked to have listened as to why, and I was right. It's a good thing I got your phone number because I don't know what would have happened. Yeah, and Brian Friedman just sent me his phone number because I just hope this doesn't happen again. Because otherwise, his protagonist, Rudy Cutter, might come after me. Oh, my God. So, feel better, and I hope to see
you.
Thank you.
You too.
If you get if you're creating the book of short stories, send it to me. I'll read it.
I will.
Review it. I'll add it to my pile of seven. I literally have 50 books inside, but, you know, if you send it, I'm going to put it to the top of the list. You know that.
All right. Thanks, Fran. Thanks so much for having me.
Everybody have a great day, and bye.
Bye-bye.